Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 4th, 2016. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the interwebs. I'm Chris Cosenza.
I'm Scott Long.
So, I like this lead item we want to talk. I want to jump right into this.
Do you? All right, good. I don't really like it, so I was hoping you would.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely love it. Of course, let's talk about it. It's the Global Poker League draft, and I loved the draft. I looked at the teams, and I instantly picked the teams that I thought are going to run away with this thing or something, you know? But let's get to the underlying story first of Antonio Sfondiari pulling himself out of the draft. I thought that was kind of surprising because I thought he would fit with like any team, to be honest with you. I thought anybody would want this guy on their team given how he plays on the big stage.
Sure.
You know, well known he is everywhere, so he would attract, you know, whatever. And then he just pulls out inexplicably. Now, do you think it had anything to do with the thing that happened before where he peed at the table and he's...
I would think if anything, this would be a way to redeem that, wouldn't it?
I would think so too. That's why I'm so curious as to what happened, and I don't think they've got an explanation of it yet, have they? I have not seen anything.
I haven't seen anything. I'm sure maybe somebody's heard.
No, I haven't seen anything. So I wondered if he just was looking at it the wrong way and saying maybe I should just lay low for a little while after I've done this thing and people are giving me crap over it. But he's like right now when you think about poker, he's like the face of poker right now. Negreanu,
yeah,
maybe.
Certainly. Yep.
But, I mean, Sfondiari, Negreanu, maybe even Ivy, but for negative reasons recently, I don't know why. But, anyway, I just think that Sfondiari is, like, the most popular poker player in the world right now as far as popularity. And I'm sure that hurt the GPL when this happened. They were just devastated.
Oh, I would think so. Yeah, it's interesting what you just brought up was like all the things that I was gonna.
Sorry.
No, it's great. I mean, I think it's just funny. All you did it all in one sentence. You brought up all these little things I want to talk about. And the first thing for me was, and this is more on me than it is on the GPL, I think, but I don't know a lot of these people. Should I know some of these people?
Oh, I thought the same thing. I you know. Sometimes it gets back to our business model, which has evolved.
That's exactly what I was going
to say. You know what I mean? So you and I now are really geared toward what's going on locally and small-time poker and medium-sized poker. And
recreational poker.
Recreational poker. And we're not really going to the A-list stuff. So, yeah, I think that's probably why we don't. But a lot of those names, I mean, there's no clue of who those people are at all. Some of them are like peripheral. I see them in results of some of the bigger events that come across our emails and stuff.
I mean, there's a couple big names that I knew. Obviously, Jonathan Little, Chris Manny, Mike Carroll, Lepore, you know, Maria Ho, some of the owner, managers, whatever they call them.
Right.
And, you know, Jonathan Little was a draftee that I obviously know and know a lot, right? And then there's a couple other names that I've seen, like you said, like in listings or things, or I've heard about them in stories and stuff. But I don't even really know those people. And then there's a whole litany of names there, people that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
So, you know, like I said, it's probably more on me. And you're right, it is probably our business that we're more focused. You know, we've gotten away from the whole pro stratosphere over the last couple of years.
Right.
But if it's not me, and I'll be curious to hear from our listeners whether it is, that's probably not a good thing for the GPL, especially in light of what you mentioned about Antonio not being part of it.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, again, when you're talking about it being a worldwide thing or something like that, then it's like, okay, well, those people might be able to pull. It's kind of like when we talked about the November 9 where I'm saying, you know, do you remember who the November 9 was two years ago? But you're saying, you always come back with, no, but it's about they're popular in their area and they're boosting their ratings in that region or those local hometown things like that. So it could be a case of that where, okay, so we don't recognize these names or we don't know who they are. And from that standpoint, you're thinking, how can it be popular? But then you think to yourself, well, those players may be popular in their region or maybe popular in their country or whatever. So,
and I certainly think that's the case with this Hong Kong team, right? From the, you know, the analysis, I've read a couple analysis of this, and everybody seems to be in agreement that this Hong Kong team is a bunch of players that aren't established yet,
right?
But might be popular there,
right?
So I get that. That makes sense, I guess.
But I it's funny because every year it gets worse for me to recognize names when we do stuff like this. Well, every year it's getting worse.
Well, I mean, it was what we go back to all the time is, you know, poker used to be on like every channel.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
I mean, you'd flip channels during the day. Even if you weren't a poker player, you would find poker somewhere, and it was generally the same people playing, right?
Right.
You know? And it hasn't been that way for several years now. So, you know, unless you've got a Twitch account or are just really a poker fan, I don't know where you run into these people, you know?
Yeah.
So one of the other things I thought was interesting was, and reading some of the analysis of the draft, was team strategies. And I think this is really interesting to me because I still don't really understand what the Global Poker League is. Right? I read all the stories. I've got a general idea. You know, they have these teams and they're trying to sportify poker. I get all that, right?
Right.
And they're having these competitions. It's going to be, you know, different poker, you know, quicker shot clocks, all that kind of stuff. It's interesting to me that people are like having this analysis on whether these teams did the right draft strategy when I don't think any of us really know what this thing is yet.
That's true, because we don't really have the layout of how it's going to play out, right?
Right. So, right. I mean, a couple of things that I saw in the strategy was, you know, hey, you know, I'm surprised this team didn't pick the best player on the board, right?
Right.
But then somebody came back and said, but the style of poker that we're going to be playing, the GPL, doesn't really, you know, having the best player might not be the best choice for you. It might be the best personality, the best person that people want to watch and cheer for, because you're trying to build this franchise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's kind of interesting, but I don't know what anybody's basing it. Maybe everybody's basing it on their own idea of what this thing's going to be.
I kind of understand the marketing angle of your pick, but I think that there's going to be money tied to this, and I don't think players, when they're drafting, are thinking that way. But if they were, I don't think that's enough to... I mean, I'm not going to watch a baseball diamond full of Andrew Dice Clays because they made me laugh when I was 15 years old. You know what I mean? I want them to win.
I don't know, I might. Poor Fairlane was a good movie.
Oh, jeez. I walked out of that movie. That's the only movie my entire life I ever walked out of.
Awesome.
My brother and I walked out of it. I have never walked out of a movie in my life.
Yeah, you're probably right, though, because it's never on TV anymore.
Ford Fairlane?
Caddyshack's on every day on some channel. Ford Fairlane's never on.
I don't think I've ever seen that ever, like on TV either.
I'm saying.
I think no matter what the format would be, you want the best poker player that's possibly available. I do, because it's going to be Hold'em.
I don't know. I mean, I if we're talking about getting people, you know, I don't know exactly what the business model is again, right? I don't know whether they're trying to get me, Scott Long, to pay $25 to come watch poker, right? If that's the case, it's going to have to be more than just good poker that I'm seeing.
Right.
It's going to have to be a show, right?
Right.
And you could do a show in a couple different ways. It could be just this whole cube thing and just the novelty of how these people are playing. That's interesting. Or it would have to be the personalities. You know, I'd have to go in wanting to see people. I think it's a lot like, you know, MMA or wrestling, right? Because my dad's a big wrestling fan, right?
You're right.
So, you know, you've got WrestleMania, which fills these huge arenas with people, wrestlers that people know, right? And storylines and all that. But he also drags me to these Port Richie strip mall wrestling shows, right? With people that no one's heard of. But because they're doing the whole wrestling thing, you know, with the throwing the chairs and all that stuff, people cheer and like it, right?
Yeah.
But if those people aren't entertaining at that level, you're never going to get anybody in the door. Because you can fall back on the personalities.
Right.
Right?
Right. I'm always one for authentic things. Like, like I've never gone and seen a cover band in my life.
Ah, you're missing out.
I know, dude. I know I am. And
the Little People Kiss band. That's a good one.
Man. Yeah, I've actually seen them, but I've seen them like on TV, I think. I don't think I... But, I mean, I have actually never gone... And I know I'm missing out. Like, I could go and hear a Rush cover band that would actually have a singer who can sing.
Right.
You know, because, I mean, Geddy, I mean, he's obviously been ripped in the media for years about his voice, and but now that he's old and his voice is that bad, it's really painful to listen to.
Right.
So I'm missing out, but I'm never like if I liked wrestling, I don't think I could go watch like remember the movie The Wrestler?
Oh yeah,
that was a great movie, but they had all these like little small things in cafeterias.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know. I couldn't do that.
That drags me too.
Yeah. I couldn't do that.
You know, it's kind of funny because it's you can see these people trying to be these big stars,
and right?
They have just learned how to wrestle in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, right.
There's enjoyment factor in watching them not knowing what they're doing, right? But yeah, I guess that's my point, though. So, I mean, the GPL is not going to get you to come unless the personalities are there, right? Because you don't want to go just see the... Yeah.
Or at least the quality.
Show.
Right? I mean, it has to be quality, and personality. Because you're right, because he could be the greatest poker player in the world if I don't know who he is and I don't know anything about him and he doesn't do anything except sit there and win pots, then yeah, I'm going to be bored out of my mind. So you're right. You're absolutely right.
But again, I don't know if that's just it. I don't know whether he's trying to get me to pay $25 to come watch poker. I don't know whether he's trying to get me to watch it on Twitch on a Thursday night. On either pay-per-view or, you know, sit through 1,000 ads. I don't know. But either way, this whole thing hinges on fans, right? Because it's not buy-ins. It's all money put up by sponsors, which is what the pros like about it. They don't, you know, don't have to pay to play anymore. They get paid to play, right?
Right.
So that money's got to come from somewhere, and if it's from sponsorships, that's great, but sponsorships only last as long as the sponsors get value for it, and the value they get is eyeballs. So at the end of the day, they need to get people to watch this. But, you know, I also don't know where it's going to be, you know, so let's go back to the Hong Kong team again, which I think is a very interesting test on this. You know, it was chosen based off from the analysis I've seen on players that they thought would appeal to that market. So is that because they're hoping to get players in Asia or poker fans in Asia to actually watch the thing on Twitch? Or are they going to have matches in Hong Kong and people are going to show up? You know, is there going to be a merchandise tent somewhere?
Yeah.
These people are going to buy this stuff from, and they're going to buy it because, hey, good thing the Hong Kong team drafted Hong Kong players rather than Americans, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know.
I guess there's just so much we don't know. But I think that's why the more interesting thing to me was people having all this analysis that, and maybe they know more than I do, or maybe they're just guessing.
You're absolutely right. And until we get some sort of message or something, because even the Russian one had Russian players on it.
Right.
You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, so clearly they're trying to boost these markets that aren't, you know, Western European or United States, or you know what I mean? So they're clearly trying to boost those markets, but at the same time, you would think that they might want to make sure that a Esfandiari type is on the Hong Kong team, so they're getting the exposure to what is already successful over here, or whatever, or the people that are making the game popular. You know, instead of just people they know. So that there's six of one, half dozen of the other. You go with people that they might know already and they can relate to, so that's why you picked them. But at the same time, you're losing out on the star factor of why this league and why it's supposed to be popular and why this sport is so great and why people still watch it on TV, because of the entertainment value of these personalities that you're not going to get from locals that you're picking because they just happen to be in your country or whatever. It's going to be interesting. I mean, there are some pretty good teams here that on paper look fantastic, that
sure,
some names I do know. That being said, I don't know all these names, so they could be better and I don't even know it. So my favorite team is probably the Royals. I think the Royals are a kick-ass team.
Yeah, I think everybody's kind of consistently chosen that as the team that had the best draft. But again, based on what, you know, I mean,
yeah, I know.
For us, it's people that we know, and it makes sense. But I thought it was interesting too that some of the people were talking about drafting a team of people that would get along with each other.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know how this is going to play out, but that seems to be something that would not be as important to me as it would be if I was drafting a basketball team.
Right. I mean, how often are they going to interact with each other?
Right, yeah, yeah.
You know, unless it's a four-person tag team thing, or even then, you know, I mean, there's some strategy involved there, but really, it's an individual sport when you're sitting down, or game, or whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I guess the reason why I like that team so much is Selps is a multi-bracelet, you know, just powerhouse at the table. Chris Mormon is unbelievable online and in regular poker too, but I mean, he's a legend online. And Justin Bonomo, of course. I don't know much about Igor Kurganov. I mean, I've read his name like in magazines and stuff, but I don't really know much as far as his accomplishments. I haven't looked it up before the show. But just those three alone, that's a seriously stacked resume right there of talent. So, and then the Money Makers too, the Las Vegas Money Makers. That's a real good team too. Anthony Zinno, who's multiple WPT Player of the Year, WPT titles and Player of the Year, and Duhamel, I mean World Series champ. Jonathan Little, our friend Jonathan Little, who's obviously got WPT stuff and just an incredible player, and Jake Cody I've heard of. So I mean, that's going to be a kick-ass team too. I mean, there's a lot of good teams. It's just there are a lot of neat names missing too, not just Antonio, but I mean, you think about some of the, you know, there's no Helmuth, there's no Negreanu, there's no Ivy, you know, the big names that we know of,
right?
You know, Galfond's playing, which is pretty cool.
But, you know, I guess I would say in a perfect world, they kind of want a good mix, right? I mean, obviously, I think they would have liked Espandiari to play as he was supposed to.
Right.
But, you know, I think you're also trying to grow the next generation of poker, too.
That's true.
So, you know, I would say they probably didn't go out to target Doyle Brunson or, you know, Johnny Jan or any of these players.
Right, not the old guys, but, right. You know, Negreanu is still in his
40s. Even the younger ones, I don't think. I think they're looking to, you know, change the narrative of poker, maybe.
Yeah.
And go after a new type of player while still having a couple, you know, good mix of players that people do know. But again, it all hinges on how it actually plays out, so that's what I'll be interested to watch.
Yeah, I want some more details.
I think when we talk about their second GPL draft, if there is one next year, it'll be a very different conversation than we just had. Because we'll actually know at that point, you know, what's going on, and it makes more sense, I think.
All right, well, they got us to talk 20 minutes about it, so they did something right, I guess. Holy cow, 20 minutes on the GPL draft.
Something to be said for not having all the information out there.
Right? Starting to seem like a fantasy draft now. All of a sudden, I'm losing my life.
All right, well, this next item, we're not a political show. As I put in the show notes here, obviously, we don't do a good enough job of hiding our politics, I think, by the emails we get time to time. But this next item, I think, will be, if you're politically inclined, you'll be doubly interested in this. And if you're not, there's still a really good poker lesson in it. So this is why it's on the show this week.
All right.
Street.com. Website that covers usually mostly financial stuff. Actually, an interesting story. The author wanted to, you know, because there's a lot of discussion right now about how to stop Donald Trump, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he wanted to write a story, and he thought it would be interesting if he approached it from a poker angle. So he sought out Phil Helmuth and asked him how he would defeat Donald Trump. And what was interesting about Espil is, according to the article, politically inclined, but has not backed a candidate yet. So he was just, we can assume, just giving his straight poker advice here.
Mm-hmm.
But his approach would be the same approach that he would take when he's playing against a loose aggressive player at the poker table, commonly known as a lag, right?
Right.
And we've talked about that a lot on the show, and I found this very interesting because this is the type of player that I hate to play against, and I get a lot of feedback from our listeners because my advice usually is, get up, leave.
Move to Canada.
Right, exactly. which I still stand behind, but the problem is that you can't do that in a tournament, right? So you have to learn how to play against these players,
right? Right.
And it's not very much different than running for president, right? You know, if you don't like the Luth aggressive player, you don't like Donald Trump, you can't just pick up and go run for president of Canada. you're forced to confront him, right? So, you know, his first advice was kind of similar to what I've been saying, to harpoon him. And what he means by harpoon is sit back, be patient, wait for your big hand, and then punish him with a big hand.
Uh-huh.
Because he's going to be playing lots of pots, and then he's going to be very active, and that's how he's going to accumulate his chips or his votes. And then just wait for him to make a mistake when you have the goods, and boom. Now, the one thing that I don't do, and I really learned from this, is that what Phil says is not just sit back and wait. Because my advice, my plan has always been kind of trap, right?
Yeah.
All right, now I got the aces. I'll let the guy, you know, I'll limp in and let the guy do the raising. His advice is to be very active once you get that hand.
Yeah. He's saying that because he knows that this guy is going to 3-bet your raise. He knows it's going to happen, so then you can 4-bet him, and then... You know, that's what he's saying, I think. I mean,
right. I think that was a missing part of my fight against my completely losing fight against losing.
Right. You were always trying to trap rather than mixing up your.
Rather than just say, all right, I'm gonna mess it up.
Mix
it up with him, right?
Right.
Then his other advice was you have to be. I don't know if you say crazier, but you have to be. If somebody's being really active at the table, you have to be even more active. So you have to put him in a play. Even if you don't have the goods, you know, if he's 3-betting all the time, then you need to be 4-betting with something and push him back a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, but if you're totally not comfortable with that, you have to be comfortable with all facets of play to be able to do what he wants you to do. That's the thing, and I don't think you are.
No. Yeah, I guess that's what I've been saying.
Yeah.
Right? So, but you know, again, the lesson is that you have to learn how to play.
Yeah. Games.
So, you know, it's not enough for me just to say I'm going to get up and move. You know, I gotta figure out how to play these.
People. Yeah, and I think if you rewind and listen to our shows when we talk about this, I always tell you that I'm like, just get better at it. You got to, because you're going to be face the fact that you're going to be in a tournament because you play more tournaments than cash. You're gonna. Face this guy sometime, and you're going to have to learn to deal with him, and you have to do it. And I agree. I've never taken that approach that he said, because generally, you're not with, in our level of poker, you're not with that player for very long, because they're fast-moving blinds and low,
right.
Small chip stacks or whatever, and so it's not you're in the World Series dealing with this guy for 4 hours, you know, so sometimes maybe that sort of enables us to not have to get used to playing against this guy.
Or, you know, I expect him to be playing against him after Super Tuesday.
Yeah. Oh, sit on the left of Trump. And let him... I think everyone's on the left of Trump. But I thought it was very interesting. And then as I was reading the article, I was wondering if there's... Like, if you can apply this to other things in life, like dealing with your boss or...
Oh, I would
the
think
spouse.
So. I guess that's why I found it very interesting about it. I mean, obviously, I'm politically inclined, so I was interested in that. And certainly, a loose aggressive player is my nemesis at the table. So there's lots of reasons I liked it. But I think you're right. I think what was really interesting is that how much we've talked on the show about how we're going to continue to grow the game of poker and get it into the mainstream, right? And
right.
Not just the poker heads that have their Twitch accounts and love it, right?
Right.
And so this is kind of a subtle way. I mean, it's nice to see poker being brought into a mainstream kind of media discussion that's not about poker, but shows people that are reading it how complex the game of poker is and how much you can learn from playing poker.
Yeah, yeah.
And apply it to
real life. Yeah.
You know, not. And you're right, it's not just about, you know, defeating Donald Trump or beating the kid with the hat screwed on backwards at the table. It's you could use that lesson for anybody that's kind of boisterous or aggressive in your life.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, he made specific examples of what Rubio is doing now and how Rubio now is going on the offensive a little bit, and he thinks, you know, it's the right thing to do. Maybe he waited too long though, he's not sure, and that then at the end he's talking about Trump. You know, Trump changed the rules, and we've let him do that. And that's right, the kind of thing at the table.
Exactly.
If you let a player change the rules and you're playing the way he plays, now you've got to either play the way he plays, you know, and do it better, or you're going to suffer the consequences, which is what, you know, if you're not a Trump backer, now that's what the country is doing. They're suffering the consequences of letting this guy take over.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it was a good read. Definitely
on,
a good read.
TheStreet.com. So.
All right, we've got some Annie updates. It's time for us to build up our bench of possible Annie Up ambassadors. If you'd like to be one of our monthly magazine contributors and represent Annie Up in your home area, apply at annieupmagazine.com/ambassadors. We have immediate openings in Michigan, Louisiana, and Pacific Northwest. We have those areas covered, but we could use someone there to actually do some more legwork, being in the rooms and doing stuff. So we got the area covered for writing and stuff, but we will totally surrender that to you if you are totally interested and qualified. So, and Palm Beach Country Club in West Palm Beach, Florida, will be awarding 20 Annie Up Poker Cruise packages for our April 18th sailing to the Bahamas over 4 days in March. The high hand every 30 minutes from 10:30 p.m. to 12:30 a.m. on March 4th, 5th, 11th, and 12th will win a package. For more information on all of our Annie Up Cruises, go to AnnieUpCruises.com. Hey, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline at 206-424-6145 or emails us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call to Florida Hand of the Week, we'll send them something cool. It's our first audio clip in a while.
Audio.
And it comes from Malcolm O'Malley.
Yeah.
Which is always pretty cool. And so, all right, we'll just hear what he has to say.
Hello, Annie Up Nation. It's Malcolm O'Malley here. I am calling about a question that I have. In a couple weeks, I'm going to be headed to a casino and playing a 2 to 10 spread limit hold'em game. And I'm just wondering if Curtis Scott or any of the other members of the Annie Up Nation have any tips to play spread limit. I have very limited experience with a spread limit game, so any tips or advice you could give me would be helpful.
All right, first of all, can I say I love the 2 to 10 spread limit game?
Sure, go ahead, say it.
I think it's a lot of fun, and I'm really upset that it's really hard to find.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, Malcolm's call was probably, he didn't say that, but, you know, you can tell from there that it's not a game that people are used to playing or you see very often, so that's why it's confusing if it looks. And the reason I like it is that, you know, my contention has been that No Limit is really kind of destroying the poker market, because for players that don't really know what they're doing, it's a really volatile game, and they end up getting stacked and cleaned out a lot quicker than if they were to play limit poker, which is what I prefer, where your money is going to last a lot longer. But I get it. You know, it's not as exciting as No Limit. So that's why I think Spread Limit is a perfect mix of the two, because it does kind of have some protection for your bankroll, but also has some room for you to be creative with your bets. So unlike a 4-8 limit game where you have to bet $4 or $8, depending on what street it is, or No Limit where you have this wide range that you can bet and people make mistakes at. Now you've got some range in here. So a spread limit, essentially you can bet. Look, I'm getting all choked up.
Here, I'll sing a song or something while you...
But no, so in a spread limit you can bet anywhere between $2 and $10 at any time.
Right.
And the blinds are probably, in this game, probably going to be 1-2. So I guess the tips here are... The biggest tip, I think, from the spread limit games I played in is sizing up the table. You know, I like to give a good orbit to figure out what the players at the table are like. Because I've seen these games play two different ways. I see them play like a traditional limit game. Mm-hmm. So most people are going to bet, if they're going to raise, they're going to raise it to 4 pre-flop, right? And essentially will bet 4 or 8 the rest of the hand, just because that's where they're normally playing in their limit games they come from. Or I see it become a pretty much like a fixed limit $10 game where every bet's $10 or whatever the highest amount is. So I think the game, your strategy depends on what the game is. So, you know, if it's a very timid game, then I'm going to be the one that's pushing that $10 bet pretty regularly. Certainly on the end when I had the goods. And if it's that fixed 10 or everybody's betting 10, then the game changes. Now you don't have that range anymore that you have to worry about. But you have to understand that you're playing a $10 limit game now, which is a lot bigger than I think you tend to expect from a 2 to 10 spread limit.
Yeah, I think I've only played spread limit twice. And I don't recall when it was, but I do recall playing it. And then the next time I played it, I remember thinking to myself, okay, I'm going to treat this like a regular limit game. And then most of the time, people play it that way. So when they're betting the full limit, you know, they have it. Right. It happens a lot with, you know, when you could just tell who the rocks are at the table. So that I kind of had the same approach as you, is I kind of just watched to see what the players bet like and how they bet and what they turned over when they bet that way. And then, you know, it's very difficult to get creative when you only have between $2 and $10 to bet.
Very true. But there is room for creativity.
No, I know. I mean, to be very creative, it's hard. And so most of those players start to fall into their rhythms of, you know, make it four, you know, make it, you know, like in our home game, we used to have a guy in the home game who doesn't play very often anymore, but we would play no limit and he would still raise as if it was a limit game. And so when he did that, you're like, he just doesn't understand it. He doesn't get it. So when he finally did make the raise, he thought, well, he's got to have kings or something. Yeah. And he did. And so there's a lot of tells there. So I think when you're playing 2 to 10, I will always treat it as a limit game until I can get a good baseline of what these players play like and what their actions mean. And then at that point, then I'll decide when I can use it against them. But there are nuances to when you want to make it 10 to go and whatever.
It's a good example of this whole push-pull concept, too. Yeah. You got to remember, you know, what are you trying to do? You trying to pull people into the pot? If you are, then don't bet the full 10. You're trying to push people out of the pot? Then don't bet the minimum 2.
Right.
So, I mean, maybe if you have pocket 3s in middle position, you know, you might want to bet that 10 and thin the field so they have a chance of holding up. Or maybe you want to limp in and set mine, and then, you know, knowing that you get that $10 max that you can punish them with once you hit your set. So,
yeah.
All kind of depends on what you're doing. But I know I've told this on the show before, it's been a while, but I always like bringing up this spread limit story when I played, because a lot of stud is spread limit now.
Right, that's what I've done. I played it in stud most of the time.
Right, and here at the Hard Rock in Tampa, they used to, I think they probably still do, have a 1-5 spread limit stud game with no antes and a dollar bring in. And so the one time I played it, in stud, obviously you want to protect your hand when you get a good hand to begin with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I got split aces, and somebody brought it in for a dollar, and I made it 5, and everybody folded, and the dealer took the dollar bring in, dropped it in the rake box, and started shuffling the cards. And I was the only one at the table that wasn't alive for George Washington swearing in, and they all grumbled, "Why would you do that?" And I'm looking at it, why wouldn't I raise with aces? And they're like, well, because they're being folded and they take the dollar, you idiot.
So you broke even.
How am I supposed to know that?
Oh, man.
As funny as that story is, but it's also the lesson there, too, is that you don't want to get too excited with your big hands, too, because you know, it's not a game where there's a lot of pre-flop $10 bets.
Right.
And all of a sudden, you get aces, you're like, all right, I'm going to protect my hand and bet $10, and then it'll be fold until you pick up $3. So it may not be the right bet. So it's a much more complicated game than you might think it is. But I'll be interested to hear how Malcolm enjoys it.
Yeah. Well, the O'Malley audio collection continues as we complete an O'Malley's move today. Here comes part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are seated in a $1, $2, no limit hold'em home game. This is our regular game, so we know these players well, and they know us just as well. We bought in for $200 and have worked our stack up to $225. The table is 8-handed. The blinds post, it's folded to an MP who makes the table standard raise of 3x to $6. It's folded back to us on the button, and we look down at the Jack of Hearts, Jack of Clubs. We up our opponent's raise from $6 to $18. It's folded back around to the MP, who thinks briefly before calling. This opponent is one of our good friends and started the hand with 200. He's even for the night. He's a solid player, plays ABC poker, and rarely steps out of line. He might even play a little too tight. With about $40 in the pot, the flop comes down the 9 of spades, 8 of hearts, 7 of clubs. This is a pretty good flop for our hand. We have an overpair and a gut shot straight draw. Our opponent thinks for a while, counts out some chips, thinks some more, puts the chips back, and checks. Tens? Sixes? We're going to make a bet. I'm pretty sure we've got the best hand at this point. We bet $25 into the $40 pot. Our opponent thinks again for a time before making the call. There's $90 in the pot, and our heart sinks when we see the ace of clubs hit the turn. We put $45 into this pot, so we're not nearly pot committed. The hand takes another interesting turn when our opponent, seemingly equally disappointed in the ace, checks. I'm not sure I want to put any more money into this one at this point. We check behind. The river is a blank, the four of hearts. Once again, our opponent checks. What's the move?
All right, I think there's a good chance we're ahead here, but our opponent's hesitation at times makes me worry he might have an ace of some kind that he's not confident about, maybe ace-jack, ace-ten. And it's likely he's going to call any reasonable bet, so it's quite a pickle, I think, for us. Do you check and lose value to a lesser hand, or do you bet and lose money we didn't need to an ace? Obviously, I'm a more cautious player than most, so I think I'm just going to check here, be happy that I won a pot with a pack of checks.
Yeah, I'll check too, though I might have bet that turn to rip the ace. You know, what good is position if you don't use it? To me, if I had bet the turn he called again, I might have bet the river, but in this case, I'll check and be happy if we win. I mean, I just, when I have position and that guy checks, I mean, there's been times where I try to rep it and he's got it, but really, why is he checking? So if I have position, I'm going to bet the ace, that is if I have it, and then if not, I still got a pretty good hand, so, but we'll see what happens. Here comes part two.
Hello again. Even though our opponent isn't showing much confidence in his hand, I'm not so sure how confident we can be in ours either. Perhaps this is a weak play, but we're going to check behind. If we're good, we'll be happy to take the $90 pot. If we're not good, we haven't sunk all that much into the hand and can easily bounce back from this. Our opponent turns over, the Jack of Spades, Jack of Diamonds. Hey, same hand. We flip over our jacks, share a laugh, and split the pot. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying sometimes you should let a friendly game remain a friendly game. I hope to see you on the felt.
You know, I always get a kick out of players having the same hand. I think it's kind of funny. But I think it also helps to illustrate the differences of position and player style in a way that's not really possible when players have different hands. So I think here, the lesson, as my lovable co-host suggested, was that we had position to rep that ace. And had we done so, we likely would have won the whole pot, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a chance that when you try to rep it, that they have it. But in this position, I was definitely comfortable betting this time, and I really wish we had. But
yeah. I mean, I think you bet that turn, and that guy's gone, right?
Yeah, but we didn't lose, so
no.
That's always a good thing.
We just kissed our sister. I don't have a sister, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either, but I got a sister-in-law.
Sister-in-law? Ooh, that's probably more scandalous.
Yeah, well, I'm not doing that,
actually.
Not doing that.
I guess it depends. All right, well, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast at antiupmagazine.com. Longtime listener, frequent contributor Jason Grimes has brought us a short hand this week. He says he's been playing 5-5-10. What that means is a mandatory $10 rock straddle from whoever won the last hand. Never played a rock game. Have you played a rock game?
I played a rock game once on the ship and got up real quick.
Yeah, it's not for me.
It gets out of hand real quick.
Yes. Big pots.
Yeah.
He's been playing for approximately 3 hours, which is approximately 3 hours and more than I've ever played a rock game. So, he says he's had insanely good luck, gone from 800 to just under 2,000.
Wow.
That kind of shows you the swings in a rock game, right?
Wow.
Mandatory straddle rock is on the button for this hand. So that means the starts with a small blind. So the big blind calls the 10. The middle position player raises the 60, bolts to us in the cutoff. And just like an O'Malley's move, we have the Jack of Spades, Jack of Clubs. So all Jack show today.
Yeah, all Jack, all O'Malley. It's about. Well, if I'm being honest, I'm probably just calling. You know, it is. There's really no right way to ever play this hand, it seems. Yeah, so, right? Yeah, I mean, the guy made it 60. There's still people left to act behind me. But if I just call, that leaves it open to someone else to squeeze me, too. That's the thing.
Good point.
You know, I just don't know. I could re-raise and be real aggressive. You know, I just don't know the temperature of this room. You know what I mean? I don't know what this table is really like. I mean, they're playing a crazy game anyway, so you know they're probably crazy players, or at least very aggressive, very good players.
Right.
So that being that, that $60 raise could mean anything. Doesn't have to mean that we're losing. So if that's the case, I'll probably make it 100. I got $2,000 in front of me. I'll probably make it 100 to go.
Well, it's like mid-raising, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I guess it's a mid-raise.
The race, so, yeah,
he made 60, so yeah. No, maybe more. Maybe 130, 140, something like that. Just something that, hey, you know, I don't mind being heads up with somebody with jacks, but I'm going to tell the rest of the table, you know, you got $10 invested, you got $5 invested, you're not playing.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the pickle we are here, is that we're no longer set mining now, I don't think.
No.
Now that it's 60. So now we got to, you know, win with the jacks or win with our bets. And also being a rock game, too, I'm going to assume, like all the rock games that I've watched, that this is, as you mentioned, pretty aggressive and wild, right?
Right.
So I don't think it's unheard of probably for a 3-bet here to 130, 140, maybe even 150.
Maybe even
like
more
that.
Because, yeah.
Yeah. And try to get isolated and take my chances if a queen, king, or ace come. And I'll also, the other thing too, I think, is that we kind of have position here because we're in the cutoff, but if we just check, it's going to be easier for, you know, the next two players to come along as well, too. And with jacks, I really want that position.
Yeah.
So if we put a raise in here, we're giving ourselves a much better chance of being last to act the rest of the hand, which is really, really powerful when you have a vulnerable hand like jacks, I think.
And for some reason, I was thinking that the guy made it 30, not 60, so that's why I was saying 100. So, I would think 150 is probably the... If I'm going to raise, 150 is probably the least I would make it. And then I think that would be enough to clear the field unless some huge hand wakes up behind me with, you know, like somebody in the blinds limped with aces or the button somehow has something. But I think that's enough to get me heads up with this guy at least. And like I said, I don't know what a $60 raise means in this game. It could mean anything. You know, it could be a standard raise when somebody, you know, if the rock's in play and somebody's limped already or whatever, that could be a standard for king-queen, you know. So how do I know? Or even if it's ace-queen or ace-ten or something, you know, he could still be doing that because it's a crazy
absolutely.
Game. So I think I really do want to keep that position and take control of the hand. And
figure out more of what he has probably, too. Yep.
Yeah. So let's make it like 140, 150.
All right. Our hero raises to 125. And both the button and the big blind call.
Wow. That's
a
huge...
He doesn't mention the middle position player. Huh.
Is that the $60 raise, the middle position player? Because of the way
yeah.
it goes?
Yeah, but he still has to call a raise, right?
Oh.
I guess we'll figure it out here eventually.
Maybe that's the guy that called.
I don't know. We'll figure it out.
All right.
All right, so we go to the flop, which is the deuce of clubs, seven of diamonds, deuce of hearts, and checks to us.
What was the middle card?
Seven of diamonds.
Seven of diamonds. And it's check to us. Well, I mean, we took control of the hand
for
a reason.
It's three-handed, so I don't know. He must have had something incorrect on his.
I think that $60 player is still in.
Right.
So, but we have position, right?
Yes.
The button, did you say the button called or no?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. The button did call, so yeah. So actually, we don't have position.
All right, so the original guy checked to us, the original raiser checked to us. So we have what looks to be about a $400 pot here. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what to do. I mean, if I'm playing the way I normally would play, if I'm playing a tournament and it was 300 chips, you know what I mean, and I had 2,000 chips... and I just bet 100 of it, I'm probably making a bet, you know, if it's 400 chips in the middle, I'm probably making it, you know, 300. So,
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a cash game, it's a little more nuanced and not as finite. So, I mean, I probably would make it like 250, 300 to go then. You know, I took command of this hand for a reason. What am I going to do, check and then let somebody else bet 400 and then I got to guess? You know, I might as well keep controlling
or
my hand.
Or check and take the risk of ace, king, or queen coming for free.
Yeah, and getting the turn for free.
You definitely have to bet. It's a matter of how much, I think.
250, 300 maybe.
And then I think the other thing you have to consider here, too, is when you bet, it's possible that somebody's going to raise you. You get a big blind involved in this, which is fine. And then, but I think you have to be prepared to re-raise, too, I think.
Yeah, if I make it 300, if somebody makes it 900, I don't know. I mean, am I going to put the rest of my stack in and put $2,000 in on jacks? I don't know if I'm going to do that. Maybe I am. The guy could be whoever bet 60 could be tricky and just called the raise with aces, too. They do that a lot. Tough spot. This is why this game is so hard to master.
Yeah.
But I'm going to make my bet and see what happens.
All right. Our hero bets 250.
Yeah.
The button calls, but the big blind folds. And he said the button started the hand with around 1,000, so we have him well covered.
Wow.
Turn is the 10 of diamonds, or board now is deuce of clubs, 7 of diamonds, deuce of hearts, 10 of diamonds, so diamond draw on board now. And he says the big blind makes a no face down on table move.
So the guy who folded was pissed off the 10 came?
Yes.
So he had pocket 10, so now we can rule that out. So now we just got to worry if this guy has pocket 7s or a bigger pair than our jacks. Which seems weird that in this game he wouldn't have re-raised with queens, kings, or aces when we re-raised.
Right, yeah.
But maybe not. Maybe if he has queens, he's just calling because it's not, you know, not that great of a hand. So we could still be beat, but we're not beat probably by tens. That's whether or not. Would you call $60 raise with sevens and set mine? Maybe. This game is pretty loose. He's got 1,000 in front of him. But so now the pot's huge, right? Because we got 750 more on top of that, so we got like a $1,200 pot now.
Yeah.
Jeez. You know, nah, I mean, now you're looking to bet like 500, 600 here.
Well, let's see, I don't know, there was 120, three players called 125 pre-flop. Plus the blind, so.
Yeah, so that was 400.
It's like 400, and then.
And then 3250 is 11, so that's like 11, 1200.
No, there's only two 250s in there. So.
Oh, that's right, I'm thinking three players called. Okay, yeah. So 500 and four, so almost 1,000 in the pot. So I would bet like 400 again, around 450 or something, I think. But the problem is that this guy's slow playing you in position. You know what I mean? You're just walking a dog for you're walking yourself.
Well, I think here's the other thing too is this is the advantage of having a stack we have here with this hand is that at this point he's put 375 of his 1,000 into this pot, so. He only has like 600 left,
right?
That he can put in. So at this point, you know, whatever we bet here, if he raises all in, we're not folding, right?
Right. You're essentially betting his 675
so
anyway.
So the effective stack is his stack. So you know, if we're gonna bet 300, 400, let's just put 600 in and be done with it, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I guess you're right. So that's probably what we're gonna do.
It's completely different if he had 4,000 in front of him and we could be stacked here. Then that's a really different hand for me, I think.
Right, if we checked and he bet like 200, we're not going to fold that. And if we checked and he bets 400, we're probably not folding again because he might have money in the middle. So the next two streets, no matter what, he's only got 600 in front of him. Yeah, you're probably just putting them all in. Nah, probably going to put them all in. Right. I probably would have done that in a tournament too.
Bet here anyhow. I mean, we're really worried about a couple $100 behind that's going to get in anyhow. So, you know, if he has an ace, a king, or queen here, we've got a nice size pot here now. And let's make him pay to see that card.
Yeah.
If he has something like ace 10, then great. Now we're going to, you know, he's going to call and we're going to win. Or some other kind of thing like that. And if he already has a deuce or something weird like that or pocket sevens, then, you know, hey, the money was going to get in anyow, right?
So, yeah. That's a good point.
I think the stacks here made this hand a lot easier than it should have been for me.
I know there's a thinking that, too, if you bet an amount that makes it look like he has to put it all in, that you're making him think about it. You know, you could get a weaker hand, a better hand to fold. But in this case, it's going to be difficult. Why would he have called and then fold now if he had a better hand than pocket, than tens or whatever? So, yeah. Yeah, let's just get it all in with him then.
Yeah, right. All right, so he says, anyways, the 250 I bet earlier was to try to get any ace-king to go away, so now I think maybe the button has an overpair to the board, so that sucks. I check, and the button also checks.
Wow, they both checked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was afraid of checking there. I thought he might have been floating.
Now that's screaming like an ace-queen, ace-jack, something like that. Well, ace-jack is not a bad, wow. Something like that. So I think we just gave this guy a free card to beat us.
I don't know, though, because would an ace-jack or an ace, something that's not paired up, really call that 125 and then check? And the whole point of doing that is to either hit or float, and if you don't do one, then you float the other one. I mean, why would you now check it behind?
Well, that's a good point, too.
The whole point of calling it with an ace-queen or something is that if he checks to you, he's shown weakness, and now you take it away from him. If you don't take it away from him, what's the point of playing it? So I think he's got us beat. But why? And he's just beat with queens. You know? He's slow playing us with something huge.
Babe, queens? Would you check behind queens there?
No, I know. See, that's what I'm saying. Would you check? Oh, that's what I mean. Are you worried? Why would? Because then why would something that beats queens check there? So, yeah, that's a weird check.
I think he's on some kind of. Either he was. I don't know. Maybe he just chickened out on his hand. Maybe he's right. Hey, I'll go ahead and call this, and then I'll take it away from him, and then you just sized it up and said, you know, hey, forget it. I can't win this hand.
Could be nines. Could be nines. You like that flop. They're all unders. Mm-hmm. And then when we checked, he checked behind two, just in case he hit the 10.
But really, why would you not just take control of his hand yet?
I know. I don't get it. Maybe pot control, because it's such a big pot now. It's already $1,000.
But I don't think we're beat. I think we could be beat now by the river, depending on what it is.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're beat right now. But I didn't think we were beat to begin with, so that's why I was going to put the guy out.
That is bizarre. All right, check, check. What happens?
All right, river is the jack of hearts, so final board is deuce of clubs, seven of diamonds, deuce of hearts, ten of diamonds, jack of hearts. Pretty darn good card for us.
Yeah. You're only losing the quads. All right, well, the check, check now... We can look like we're just betting to steal it.
It's actually kind of cool now.
Yeah.
Because right? Now we could bet this thinking, hey, we're just trying to steal it, and hopefully he races it all in and, you know,
Yeah, I'd bet like half his stack, like 300 or something.
Yeah.
And then do like a value bet steal kind of thing, and then if he shoves on you, you're happy. If he calls, you're happy. If he folds, you're still happy because you won, but you got gypped in the end. So let's see.
All right. He says, I have to decide on a decent bet now. He says 375 preflop, 500 flop is a pot of approximately 875 to 880. He's got queen, queen, or king, king. I should get a decent bet called. If it's a holdout ace, king, he's not calling anything. So I bet 500.
That's kind of steep.
Yeah, it's almost his whole stack, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you're saying. I mean, if you want to get money out of this guy, if he doesn't have, if he has something small like nines, he might consider calling like 200 or 300, but 500, you're betting his whole stack on it. So,
yeah.
And if he has something that doesn't even pair up, he's never calling that. So he might as well get something he can call, I think. That's how I feel, at least.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it turns out he folds, and we win the pot.
Oh.
Hey, they're not always exciting at the end.
Yeah, I know. Had to be something like pocket nines. It couldn't have been ace 10, especially since the reaction of the other guy, he was mad the 10 came.
Right, right.
And he clearly didn't have pocket sevens or... I really don't think queens fold there.
No, but I think if we get like ace queen or something like that, and you know, we gave him a free card to hit his queen or ace, and he didn't hit it, and then we bet.
Yeah, because if he has something like ace king, ace queen, that he why would he call 125 after that flop unless he wants to have the chance to steal it? And then when he gets the chance to steal it, he doesn't take it.
Yeah, I mean, just because it's a 5-10-10 game, 5-5-10 game doesn't mean the players are necessarily smarter than they are in a 1-2 game, right? So. I mean, he could have just been the same way, just, you know, maybe a little bit more of a timid player, and, you know, I've got ace-king, and maybe he's listened to this podcast and knows it's a drawing hand, and was just drawing the whole way and didn't get there.
But he literally bets a fifth of his stack between the preflop and postflop, and if he doesn't have a matchup or a handmade hand, then if he's not betting that turn, then what's the point?
I think he just chickened out.
Yeah, he must have chickened out and hoped. Now you got a free shot at the river to hit it.
Yeah, if I hit one of my cards, I'm great. If not, then you know, I already chickened out, so I'm done.
Wow.
But yeah, we're poorly played on his part, regardless of what he had.
What would have been amazing is if an ace or a king came on the river. Then what would Jason have done?
Right. Right.
And then what would this guy have done? What do you finally?
And then I'm also curious if he had ace queen, whether he would have called or shoved on the turn.
Yeah.
Or even any kind of bet. I think where Jason lost value was not betting that turn.
Yeah.
Because the guy was in the hand for some reason, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think he was happy to get that free card. He might have folded on the turn, but we didn't get another dime out of him anyhow, right? So yep. It doesn't matter whether we bet there and he folds or we bet now and he folds.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And if he would have called there, that's a little bit more money we would get out of him.
Yeah. Well, the good news is that Jason won a nice spot. Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. So, all right, very good. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We will see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.